You are listening to Wells Tech, episode 576, recorded on Tuesday, November 20th, 2018. At Tu Brute, Wells Tech is a weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is a part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Today on the show, we are joined by Pastor Joel Zhang to talk about some of the things that a district president does, especially as it relates to the call system and the call process. We'll be talking a little bit about a tool that was developed to help them do their jobs. We also have some great picks this week. Sally talks about drive-through history Bible studies, which I think you'll be really interested in. And I talk about LastPass for families. We also talk about Amazon Smile once again, some great feedback, and a 3D printer that has something to do with Julius Caesar. How's that for an intriguing tease? All that and more coming right up. Hello again, everybody, and hello, Sally. How are you today?
I am awesome, Martin, and happy that it is Thanksgiving week.
It is.
Happy Thanksgiving to you in advance. Do you have big plans for the holiday break?
Yeah, everybody's at our house, so we got to find, awesome. Not everybody, but most everybody that that normally gathers for Thanksgiving in our relation. So that's about 22, 23 people, I think. So we'll figure it out. It's usually buffet style, but we get all the leftovers that way too. So not bad. I was thinking about you as we got our turkeys out and defrosting. How you were going to do it this year. You probably get a family experience that you haven't had maybe in a while, huh?
That is very true. And I actually have a turkey in the freezer. I bought one of the breast only that you can stick in the oven from frozen. And so I don't have to have the refrigerator space for a big one or whatever. But I am cooking Thanksgiving for a family that I haven't celebrated with in years, so very exciting.
You're not using, I assume you have an oven in that that four-wheeled home of
contraption
yours.
Contraption of
yes.
Yes.
But would it fit a turkey? That was one of my questions,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it fits a 9x13 just fine, so I think a turkey would work in it, but it's a gas oven. I'm not real great at the nuances of gas cooking, but yeah, it could fit a full-size turkey if I needed it to.
So is there any kind of Southern Mississippi flair you put on Thanksgiving, or is it just pretty traditional?
I think it's fairly traditional.
There's no grits involved or something like that.
No, not at the normal meal, but at the morning meal, sure. Every meal, every day starts with grits. That's the way to go.
That's right. There's never a bad time for grits.
That's right.
Yeah, it's part of the food. It's got its own food group. And when we maybe I've mentioned this to you before, when we lived in South Carolina, we were just shocked. You know, you had almost a half an aisle of different kinds of grits in the grocery store. You're lucky if you have one up here, so.
Yeah, it's very true. Yeah. So I actually was surprised at all the Cajun food. Like,
yeah.
I'm used to the Hispanic food section and the Chinese food section, but here there's more Cajun spices and all kinds of mixes, and it's really extensive. Frozen foods that are Cajun food. We got some frozen boudin the other day, just for
frozen what?
Trying it, boudin. It's like a rice sausage. It's really good, and yeah, we just were like, well, it's at the in the freezer. Why don't we try some? You know. So anyway, that's what's different down here.
Cool. Well, blessings on your celebrations. We certainly have a lot to be thankful for, and
yes,
we're thankful
we
that we're doing episode 576 here. We're actually thankful for 575 successful, I'll call them successful episodes. We recorded them and published them, if that's the equation
definition
for success, and we hope to do another one today. I'm excited about our conversation today. We had a chance to invite one of our district presidents. Sometimes I think folks in our synod don't know a lot about what our conference of presidents do. They know that they do good things for their district and for the synod, but we had a chance to ask President Joel Zhang to come on the show. He is a fairly newly minted district president, relatively speaking. When I came on board at the Senate, there was a whole different crop of district presidents, and over time here, they've all kind of retired. And Joel is in the northern Wisconsin district. If you're not familiar with the district or the Senate hierarchy, the Senate is broken up into 12 districts. Three of them right here in Wisconsin, northern, western, and southeastern. And Pastor Zank is the northern chair of the northern Wisconsin district, and he's pastor up at Mount Olive in Appleton. And we happen to know Joel pretty well. Actually, I went to school with him. He was a couple years older, but he was also our liaison to the COP in a kind of an ambitious project to redo the entire call system, which is essentially the tool the district presidents use to put together these lists to congregations and to schools for potential calling of called workers to fill, you know, new positions or to fill vacancies, those kinds of things. So why don't we play that interview now, and then we can come back and talk a little bit about the whole process. So here is Pastor Zank. We are really happy to have joining us today Pastor Joel Zank from Mount Olive in Appleton, Wisconsin, where he's pastor and also the district president of the Northern Wisconsin District of Wells. Welcome, Joel. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So let's start a little bit about yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself, personal, professional, anything you want to share to get people up to speed on who Joel Zank is and some of your responsibilities maybe as pastor and district president.
Sure. Thanks. Grew up in Schofield, Wisconsin, not too far from Appleton, about 90 miles off to the west. Headed down to Northwestern College, graduated from there, taught at Shoreland Lutheran High School for a year, did an emergency stint of teaching, which has served me well in ministry. Was assigned to Resurrection Lutheran Church in Rochester, Minnesota. I had a one-year assignment that turned into 9 wonderful years there. Our daughter Carrie was born while we were there. I'm married to Cindy. We've been married for 33 years. After we were in Rochester for 9 years, then I received the call to Mount Olive Appleton, and I've been there ever since. That's the last 22 years. So enjoying a time at Mount Olive where you get to know everybody, get to know the community. It's a large congregation. It's about 1,700 souls. So sometimes folks ask, how can you be in one place so long? But with a congregation that size, it's always changing. You know, every few years, a third of the membership or so changes. So I've probably served a good number of congregations while I've been in this one place. And then a few years back, in 2014, I was elected by the district to serve as their president, and I've been doing that for the last 4 years or so, and trying to balance duties here at Mount Olive. I serve with 3 partners, Rob Rosh and Troy Schreiner and Nate Wardell. They're good enough to keep me in the preaching schedule. The duties of DP don't always allow me to stay regularly in that schedule, but on average, I would say I get to preach about every 6 weeks or so. I get to have a weekly Bible class on Wednesday mornings, a couple boards that I get to work with. So I stay plugged in to the congregation. That's exactly what we want for our district presidents, so that they don't get so far removed from congregational life that they don't have a clue what that's like anymore. So
right.
I appreciate that.
Other than the call process and the activities around developing call lists and the like, give us a little bit of a flavor of what a district president does.
Our job description says we supervise all doctrine and practice in the district, and certainly
that's all.
That's all. That seems to be enough most days. But you know, as things roll along, and you get to know the brothers, you know you know, their faithfulness there. I think mostly what we end up doing is shepherding the shepherds. You know, it's not unusual to have a pastor, a teacher, a congregation call us and say, this is what's happening. You know, give us some advice. And that's what we're here to do. We counsel, we advise our congregations. And so we'll take phone calls and emails regularly. And I know that's how our days fill up, just trying to help congregations through things that they're experiencing, especially at a time when, you know, in the last few years, we've had congregations that have formed some dual and tri-parishes, and so we walk them through that process and learn a good deal ourselves as to how that goes. Every once in a while, a congregation will need to close, and so we want to do that in a way that celebrates the Lord's grace to that place and help them do that in a way that honors the Lord Jesus.
Nice. About how many congregations are in your particular district?
Yeah, just over 150 in the northern Wisconsin district. Okay. So we've got a good number. We have just about 70,000 souls that we serve.
Wow.
Up here. Yeah.
Wonderful. What a privilege and an honor.
Yeah.
Pastor Zank, Martin mentioned a little bit about the call system. That's what we wanted to focus on today in our conversation. And I thought maybe it might be good if you gave us a little bit of an idea of the district president's responsibilities related to the calling process in our congregations and schools.
Sure. All calls for teachers, staff ministers, and pastors need to be authorized by the district president. So all calls flow through that office. For staff minister calls, we work closely with Dr. Lawrence Olson's office at Martin Luther College. He provides the district president with a list of candidates that the DP reviews and authorizes for use in the calling body. Same sort of thing happens when someone's calling for a teacher from the field. We work closely with Commission on Lutheran Schools. They create a list for us to review and authorize and present to the calling body. Of course, this is the time of the year when that's this very day when things are starting up for us. So that'll be a busy time of the year for Commission on Lutheran Schools and for district presidents. Pastor calls, we have a little bit more hands-on with those calls. They originate, the request comes in. Typically, the district president or his designee will have a pre-call meeting with the congregation in advance of the first call meeting. And what we do there is we just walk the congregation through the calling process. Here's what you can expect. This is what we'll be busy doing behind the scenes. Here's how you can help us. And what we do there is usually walk them through a pre-call survey that they and their leadership can use to tell us how they see the ministry in that place, what they see their needs are for a pastor. And so that proves to be very helpful to us as we assemble a call list for them.
So you mentioned call list, which is a great segue into our real topic, our technology topic of our conversation, which our listeners, I think, would be interested in. We had the privilege of working with you and others to improve the technology that supports your work in developing these call lists or this whole call system. How does that work? How does the new tool work for you?
Yeah, the new tool called WellSource is a database, and just let me thank you and Sally and the whole Wells technology team for working with us on this. This is just a fantastic way of taking the information that we gather from our called workers through their biographies and their self-assessments that they turn in and letting us organize and draw on that information to create call lists. Dr. Olson's office, Commission on Lutheran Schools, all of us use that information. We take the needs that the congregation presents to us through those pre-call surveys or their online request forms, and we're able to use the database WellSource to filter through that and to find candidates that seem to be a good fit for what the congregation's looking for. And so it's a great blessing. It's a real time saver to be able to have that kind of technology at our fingertips.
Can you give us an example maybe of a request and how the tool helps you meet that need versus maybe the old days of pen and paper and, you know, those kinds of things?
Yeah, old days you would have taken your synod directory and started flipping through it, I would imagine.
Right.
Now, with the pre-call survey, for example, a congregation will tell us You know, more than anything else, we want somebody who really enjoys being in the pulpit, somebody that has a great love for preaching. Secondly, you know, we could really use somebody to reach out into the neighborhood. We want somebody who is focusing on evangelism and outreach. And so I'm able to use WellSource to actually put a list together, making those some top priorities. I'm able to search on those kind of categories based on the interests that our called workers have and the training that they have, that they tell us in their self-assessments, and produce a list that says, you know, here's somebody who loves preaching, loves to be, you know, outreach focused, and then create the list from there. So it's very helpful.
Excellent. Any particular features of the system that are most useful to you?
The features that we added most recently have just helped tremendously. And so in addition to the sorting that I just talked about and the study that we're able to do, we're also now able to have built into the system a way of finding those who are available for calls. So most of our called workers and congregations are familiar, at least those who are calling right now, are familiar with the fact that we've got some guidelines in place. We try to leave people in their present assignment 4 years from the time of coming to that place. This is on the pastor side of things. And at least 6 months in between calls. And so you can do all of this searching, but you know, you can spend hours and hours sifting through the list if somebody isn't available because they've entertained and returned a call in the last 2 or 3 months or accepted a call. And so WellSource now lets us actually work through the list and find who's available because they haven't had a call for 6 months or have been in place for 4 years, and so they're available to us. And that is an extremely helpful feature.
What kind of time is necessary to put in, let's say, developing a call list? I suppose it depends on the request, but give us an idea.
Yeah, it depends. It depends on the request, and it also depends upon where you are in the calling process. So I would say the first time that I work with a call list, and I'm working through the pre-call survey that the congregation has submitted to me, I would say it's not unusual to get someplace between 10 and 15 hours into that call list.
Wow.
Yeah, and once we have it, you know, in place, then the turnaround time can be, you know, once you're familiar with what the congregation's looking for, I would say 3 to 6 hours.
Okay.
So if I'm on the congregation or school side of this and I'm a calling body or I'm a called worker, are there things that they can do to make this process even better for you?
Yeah. I just think it's so important. Technology is a wonderful gift, and we're appreciating this. I think all of us can remember that the call is divine. And so finally, our confidence is in the fact that the Lord is working through all these things, working through us and the decisions we make and the technology we use, and have that confidence that the Lord of the church is just that, the Lord of the church, and he's directing people where he wants them to serve and brings them to that place and promises to bless them and the congregation. So that's the first thing. Secondly, I think, you know, just in the process that I've been talking about, I'll start with the called worker side of things. They keep those bios and self-assessments as up-to-date as possible. And now we're able to do that by going online and making adjustments anytime. So one of the key things, if God grows your family, if he blesses you with a child, that information gets entered. Sometimes nothing gets, you know, more confusing for a calling body than to have us present a list and says the called worker has 2 children, you know, and they're looking at that and sifting through it and processing it. And then 2 days later, after they've made contact with the individual they call, you know, they tell me he's got 4 kids, you know, why didn't you know that? So I just encourage our brothers and sisters who are called workers to keep that information updated.
And that would be on the MyWells Cloud site. We can throw out a link to that, cloud.wells.net/me, where called workers have a login and can update their personal information.
Yeah, and when they do that, if when they when they do their self-assessment, then that goes off to a reviewer. And I think that's another helpful thing, that they get a chance to chat with the person reviewing their assessments, receive that person's advice and work off of that. You know, if they've put down some numbers and a circuit pastor or a principal is telling them, you know what, you could bump that number up a little bit. You're being a bit modest. You know, your gifts are great, and we want to know that too, so that we can make the best use of that list and that advice that we're getting from the worker and his reviewer. So that's important too.
Great. How about the calling bodies? How can they help you?
Yeah, calling bodies, those pre-call surveys are very important. The online request through Commission on Lutheran Schools when they're calling a teacher to give us as much information as they can to help us formulate a picture of their needs, so that when we're busy working behind the scenes coming up with names, we can really dig into that a bit and try to find the people that would be a great blessing to them. I think the other thing that calling bodies can do right now, and this is both those who are calling and those who have called workers who are getting calls all the time, I think they can realize that right now we're in a bit of a unique time in our church's history. Many calls are out there. I know on the pastor side of things, we have 126 pastoral vacancies right now in our synod, and that means that folks are getting a lot of calls. And that's a bit of a change over the last 4, 5, 6 years. When that happens, I think, you know, churches that are having their pastors get calls all the time get a little frustrated and wonder why they're getting picked on. Those that are in the 126 are wondering, why isn't anybody coming to us? I think, again, just to spend some time reflecting on the fact that the Lord Jesus is busy working this. He's got a plan for all of us. It's a reminder to us to speak to our children and encourage them to be called workers, so that we have pastors and teachers in the future, in our classrooms and pulpits. That's just so important, so that we work together. We recognize that we're walking together and we're doing this together. It isn't no one's being singled out. It's something that is a ministry among us as a church body.
Neat, wonderful. Joel, we're going to let you go. You probably have a call list to get back to.
I do, actually. I will. I'll be working on that right.
And certainly you will be in our prayers. That's important work, and a grateful synod for it as well. The work that you do is really important to continue to spread that gospel. And we're glad we could just be a small part of that and helping out with the tool. And we'll hopefully make more improvements in the future and make that process better, all to God's glory. So thank you for what you do and for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for your support. We appreciate that.
Wonderful, Sally, to kind of get a little bit of a peek behind the curtain, so to speak, of how this how the sausage is made, so to speak, of the these call lists that the district presidents have to spend so much time on. That number kind of shocked me, the amount of time that they spend in putting these call lists together.
Definitely. I honestly, Martin, would probably rank this as one of my favorite Wells Tech interviews ever. Wow. I have so much respect for the work they do. And like you said beforehand, many people just don't have any idea of the responsibilities of the district president. So just really appreciate Pastor Zank spending some time with us and all his remarks. I think it's wonderful to see that the work that we've put into the project is assisting them in some small way.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about the project and some of the techniques we've used. It's evolved over time, but you played a major role in the development of the rollout of not only this call system, but the one that preceded it as well. What are your impressions of the process that we have to make this thing happen?
Well, I guess my first impression, or the first thing I'll say, is that having done it twice, we've definitely improved
right.
over time. Just within the last year or so, we've just fully adopted something that's called agile mm-hmm. methodologies. Another term that's thrown around a lot is Scrum. And they both kind of refer to a method of taking small chunks of work and working them all the way through to the end and making iterative process, progress is the word I meant to say, progress on whatever your big goal is. And I think that fits well with a lot of the discussions we have on Wells Tech, where we've talked about productivity so many times. Breaking things down into small, achievable steps has really been the key for us to move forward on a lot of our technology projects. And that's true of the work we did on the call system for sure.
And the methodology, I think, is has some application even beyond just building software. I think the concept of small incremental releases of functionality or, you know, whatever it is, makes some sense. You have a chance to chip away at it. You have a chance to get reactions to it from your audience, the people who are going to be able to take advantage of whatever project it is that you're producing. And I think it is a great way to measure how you're doing and change direction if necessary.
Kind of like wash, rinse, repeat, where you're in a flow. You tackle something, you work through it from getting exactly what it is you want it to look like, having it developed by those brainiac programmers that we have, and then testing it out and putting it in production, and then you start all over again. It's just a constant cycle. And we use a tool, Martin, believe it or not, we've talked about it on the podcast a few times as well, a technical tool, a website actually, Trello, to facilitate all of that work. And again, I think that could be used in any type of church or school project management setting where we have individual cards that represent the things we want to accomplish, and we move them through that cycle of, you know, now it's being spec'd out, and now it's being programmed, and now it's being tested, and now we can move it to done. And Trello allows us to kind of see that visually
right
on screen.
One of the also neat things about Trello is if you are working on a team, and you can use it as an individual to kind of keep track of your work, but especially in a team environment, it kind of can contain all of your stuff, all the conversations and back and forths, and the ability to use it as a communications tool and remember what you talked about a month ago or when you were last addressing this particular piece of the project is super valuable, and an opportunity to capture that in an all-in-one tool. You can have attachments, you can put things on calendars, there's all kinds of extensions, and you know, it's the barrier to entry on it is really small. It's really easy to understand, and you can get in for free. You can pay if you want some of the advanced features, but by and large, I think it's just a wonderful tool, not just for Agile Scrum kind of things, but just good old project management and the ability to kind of keep track of stuff. It's super easy to use. There's apps on your phone, tablet, computer, or website. There's, you know, it's always with you, so it's actually one of those things we have to be thankful for, because it would be, I think, really a stretch to try and manage these kinds of projects without a tool or something like it.
Definitely. And again, a shout out to Pastor Zank and the others that were part of our team, because they were right in there working with us in Trello. They met with us weekly. We shuffled things around to meet the current needs, you know, so we weren't locked in that we had to follow a certain path or anything. They were constantly reevaluating and adjusting the way we did things. And it took certainly a lot of effort on those people's part to be involved in the project. But Trello, once again, was a great tool for all of us to use to communicate.
Yep. So thanks again to Joel Zank and all the other what we call SMEs, subject matter experts, who contributed to the project and basically guided the way. You said this is how it should work, and gave feedback and testing, and now ultimately use the tool, which hopefully is a blessing to the Synod, as the district presidents can save some time and get some, you know, good call lists that the Holy Spirit can work through, and kind of a need to be a part of that process.
Definitely.
All right, let's move along to the next segment of our show, which happens to be news in tech. And a lot of things that we could have picked from. I picked something that I thought was actually very interesting. It came out of Google, and it applies to kind of a narrow set of phones, their Pixel line of phones. I'm interested in because I have one. I don't have the most recent model, but they have added kind of a neat feature to their camera called, what do they call it? Night Sight. And I think everybody's realized if they've used their smartphone cameras at all that one of the real challenging environments for a smartphone camera is darker environments. Indoors or, you know, after sunset, those kinds of things. And what Google has done, and I don't know how they did it, but it's basically through software, they've added a feature called Night Sight that you can turn on. It's just like, you know, one of the other settings. It's kind of a camera type. You turn it on. It asks you to hold the phone rather steady, and then you press the button. And through its magic, it really does a kind of an amazing job. I tried this just the other day. I didn't do it after dark, but I did it here in a conference room that has no windows. So I went in, I took a picture of the conference room with no flash. Then I took one with flash, and then I took one with this Night Sight setting. And the results were actually kind of amazing, where the one with the flash did okay, but you could tell there was a lot of what do they call it? There's a, you know, a lot of grit
saturation
and grain, and you know, mm-hmm. it was just a little bit you know, blurry in some spots. So the image was degraded. But you compared that then to the one using the Night Sight feature, and it was quite a bit better. It looked fairly natural. Now it didn't look the same as it did to my eye. My eye did not adjust as well as the camera did because it took a number of pictures and did its magic and gave me a lighter image than, you know, almost as if the lights were on. I'm anxious to try this in, you know, kind of outdoor settings where, you know, it's after dark and you can, you know, the light isn't real good for regular photographers to use, but this seemed to do just a nice job with it. So I don't know that it would do great for action settings because you have to, things have to be fairly still for, I think, it to do its work. But this is a nice innovation that I think we're probably going to start seeing in all of our cameras where they're going to be even more valuable where, you know, even in questionable lighting conditions, these kinds of software things can happen on our photos and give us some usable images.
Yeah, folks will have to check out the show notes. We have an article from The Verge that talks about it, and it has a ton of pictures
that
show the difference and everything. And I was reading through that before the show. I hadn't seen this until earlier today, and my husband has a Pixel phone as well. And so I'm like, Kevin, have you got this new Night Sight? So he immediately was like, how do I get it? And I really had a hard time finding it in the article. But basically, it's the Google Camera app. Mm-hmm. And you need to just update your Google Camera app if you don't have it set to automatically update. And then that functionality is just integrated
yep.
into your Google Camera.
Yep. Now, they say the latest camera, which is the Pixel 3, which I don't have, does an even better job because it takes advantage of some of the hardware that's in it, a little bit different or better camera in it. But any Pixel owner would get to take advantage mm-hmm. of this. And it is pretty drastic and dramatic.
Yeah, we're waiting for nighttime because we don't have any dark around here, and he just got it. So we'll let you know next week how it goes for us. But
very
cool
good.
Stuff.
Very good. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to Wells Now.
And our Wells Now is actually a reminder of an interview we did with Pastor Andrew Schreier. This was a couple of years ago for Thanksgiving, and he had written a book called 364 Days of Thanksgiving, and certainly that applies now as it did then. And if you're looking for reasons or ways to journal your Thanksgiving, maybe turn back the hands of time and listen to that interview. Grab a copy of the book. You can also go over to 364daysofthanksgiving.com blog and read through a whole ton of blog history where he writes about being thankful. So maybe you can incorporate it in your Thanksgiving festivities even to encourage people to share what they're thankful for or to journal it in the coming year.
Neat.
So lots of great ideas.
Yeah, it seems like only yesterday we had that interview and I looked at the numbers and it's over 100 episodes ago, 100 weeks ago.
Wow.
2 years,
yeah.
more
Time
or
flies.
Less. So, yeah, that mm-hmm. was a great interview as well. So, Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to our picks of the week. Ladies first, as usual.
Well, my pick of the week is actually a Bible study that I've been experiencing at the church we've been worshiping at. I think I mentioned a few weeks ago, we've been attending church at King of Kings in Alexandria, Louisiana, and just really enjoying being there with the family of believers and Wells members there in Alexandria and surrounding areas. Unfortunately, that congregation has been without a pastor now for 7 years, and God bless them because they have just carried the torch and had lay-led worship and Bible studies on the Sundays when the vacancy pastor isn't able to visit. He only comes once a month, so the rest of the time, they're on their own. And the way they do it for worship is they use a video sermon from another Wells congregation that ties in with the readings for the Sunday. Works really well. And what we've experienced for Bible study so far has been a video Bible study series called Drive Through History, and in particular, their Acts to Revelation, the world of the first Christians, and something we are just super impressed with. It's a whole series. There's drive-through history of the Gospels, and they have like American history and ancient history. The concept or the format is that a guy literally is in a vehicle driving in the areas that are described in the history lessons that are being presented. This one in particular is specific to the spread of the early church. And so he's started in Jerusalem, but he's been already, we've been to Caesarea Maritima, and to, most recently we were in Antioch, Syrian Antioch, and we've been to Tarsus, and we've seen these places and just amazing videography, and he tells a lot of the history that's surrounding the Bible times, and just really brings it to life for you. And, you know, doctrinally, we haven't heard anything that we've been objected to at all. It's just really very professionally done. He's kind of a funny guy, so it's lighthearted, very family-friendly. And this past week, we went to the island of Cyprus, and we learned, you know, and saw the island of Cyprus and heard about Barnabas, who was born there and who was one of the first major church leaders there. And there's churches with Barnabas's name on it and all kinds of things that just really bring the Bible to life. And I can't say enough good things about it. It's a seems to be a really great series. It's called Drive Through History, and this particular one is Acts to Revelation. And I'll actually embed a little video trailer of it from their website on the Wells Tech show notes if you're interested in getting a taste of what it's like.
So how do you get access to it? Is this for purchase? Is it?
It is.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea? It's a DVD series.
Okay.
I want to say this one is, let me scroll down. There's 18 episodes. They have a little short study sheet that just reiterates some of the main points from the video and has a few questions for discussion. There's a leader's manual that goes with it, and 9 hours of video content. So each one is about 30 minutes, each of the 18 episodes. And I want to say that price is $89. I think that's what I saw on the website. So, but definitely check out the link to Drive Through History and the video trailer that we put in the show notes.
Neat. I'll have to take a look at that. I'd never heard of that before.
I hadn't either. And actually, they had just wrapped up doing the gospel series, and they were equally impressed with it. And we didn't experience any of it. We came in on this very beginning of this Acts to Revelation series.
Interesting. Good. Mm-hmm. All right. My pick is something that we have talked about numerous times in the past, especially when we talk about security, being secure online, and password management and creating strong passwords. It's the product LastPass, but I wanted to highlight something that I've been enjoying here for about the last week or so, LastPass for Families. LastPass for Families is a particular package of LastPass. You can get LastPass Premium. There's LastPass for free, which is web only. There's LastPass Premium, which allows you to use it on mobile phones and such, which is really a neat thing, especially with the iPhone updates lately where you can integrate it right with things. And that's $2 a month. But for $4 a month, there is LastPass for families, and that would include up to, I believe, 6 family members. It's just for me, it's just me and my wife at this point, but we signed up and felt that because there are a number of accounts and banking and et cetera, that we share passwords on, it would be good if we had some way to share passwords with each other. And rather than some kind of joint spreadsheet, password protected, whatever, or a notebook or whatever, we felt that we might as well just use what I had been using for many years now, and that's LastPass, and just add the family's piece to it. So rather than the $2 a month, I'm paying $4 a month and get to add her. And then what you do is you can create your own passwords, keep your own passwords, and you don't have to share all of them, but you can determine what shared folders you both want to use. And then if you place your passwords in there, then both of you can use them and manage them and change them, et cetera. And there's different levels of permission. You can give your other family members or select family members. It can just be your spouse, and then your kids can, you know, have different access. It can be just read-only or no access or administrative access. And if you're not familiar with LastPass, just give it a try. It's easy to get set up and use. Basically, it works mostly you'd use it in your browser where you visit a site. You enter your password, username and password, and LastPass will jump in and say, hey, do you want me to remember that for you? And it's tucked away in a secure environment. And when you revisit the site, it will jump in and say, hey, do you want me to fill that in for you? So it's an easy way to create strong passwords. All you have to do is remember your main LastPass, your master password. And then LastPass will generate, you know, very difficult to guess passwords for you that you never have to know, as long as you can remember your LastPass password. I kind of had to laugh because LastPass has been down a little bit today, which very rarely happens. I've had very few problems with it, but LastPass has had some issues, as has, I think, Facebook and Twitter. So there must be something with a content provider out there going on the internets. But one good thing about LastPass is there's a setting where you can turn on offline access so that even if LastPass is down, you still have an encrypted vault on your local computer, and it can dip into that rather than jumping online and grabbing passwords that way. So they've kind of thought of that as well. So nothing bad to say about LastPass at all. Only good things. I've been very impressed with how they use the technology, and it's something that we in the Synod office have used, at least in the technology team, to secure all the passwords we have. And I was just kind of cleaning house the other day on my personal password manager, and I had almost 500 passwords from different sites. And, you know, I probably had 5 or 6 just in Google alone. But, you know, they add up over time. And I've been, you know, I think I've been on LastPass for 6 or 7 years. So it's just something that I couldn't really live without at this point. So that is my pick of the week. LastPass for families, $4 a month.
I think I might beat you on the number of Google accounts that I have. Yeah. But that's a different story. Martin, you mentioned that we use it in the office. I know there's a version that allows similar things for the office. Do you know the pricing of it? Like if we wanted to use it in a church or school?
I'd have to look. I believe, okay. I don't even want to guess at this point.
It
it's called
like
LastPass
it,
for Enterprise.
Enterprise.
Actually, there's one called LastPass for groups, and that actually might make more sense for smaller organizations, but there's one called Enterprise. And the neat thing about that is you can enforce password standards on the group, saying, you know, it must be such and such length and have these many characters. And you can see who's reusing passwords across sites. And the LastPass tool itself will give them a grade, how they're doing on their password strength or how often they reuse passwords, those kinds of things. So it really is a good thing to put in place for your organization.
Okay, I didn't quite know about that last part, so now, full disclosure, I wonder what my grade is. But, I do like the capabilities that you described for families, that sharing folders and things. I've seen that in play with our office sharing. So having that capability for families would be awesome.
Yep.
So,
and there is, and I mentioned this in the past, maybe even as a pick, there's an emergency access tool where you can designate a family member. If they request emergency access, they can get access to everything in case mm-hmm. something happens to one of the other family members. And then you can set kind of a time limit or a time frame. So if they request access, emergency access, it can be immediate or wait 3 hours. And in the 3 hour period, the person who set it up can jump in and say, no, you know, you've got some options there. So actually they've done just a super job with this. The two big ones are 1Password and LastPass, I think, are the two main players in this area. And we just stuck with LastPass this whole time.
Yep. Good stuff.
All right.
Favorite of mine as well.
Let's move on to our ministry resource. And we thought that because we are on the cusp of Black Friday and the shopping season, Cyber Monday and the like, we would want to remind everybody that if you do any Amazon shopping, there is a way for you to give to your favorite charity in the process. It's something called Amazon Smile. If you go to smile.amazon.com, you can pick your charity. Of course, Wells is there, and I just looked it up the other day. And since we've been part of Smile through Amazon Purchases, who have designated the Wisconsin Synod as their charity, we've collected $1,557. So that's nothing to sneeze at. You could add your charity if you want, or just could be a Erie Lutheran High School or prep school, or you know, whatever your charity of choice would be. There might be on there, and then 1 or 2%. It depends on the purchase. Depends on the amount, and depends on the type of product. How much goes back to that charity. But once the charity reaches a certain dollar amount, then a check gets issued, and you feel a little bit better about giving your money all to Amazon, because they also are giving some money back to your designated charity. So if you go to smile.amazon.com, you can grab that charity, and it will remind you once in a while. If you go to regular Amazon.com, hey, did you remember that you have, you know, smile.amazon.com? And there is no difference in the product set. I think I don't know that I've found any products that have not qualified for this program. So there's no harm in that. So this Christmas season, this giving season, just make sure you're remembering your charity as well.
Martin, do you have any tech on your Black Friday shopping list?
I have not thought about that yet. That's a great question. Maybe ask me next week and I'll have an answer for you. How about you?
All right. Actually, we're going kind of low tech this year. Actually, the next thing we're going to talk about, we do have some tech coming our direction. We've already bought it.
Yes, you do.
You told me about
this the other day.
So, but yeah, as far as gift giving and things, I don't think we're going to do anything too techy.
Okay.
We're focusing on games this year. We're going to have a very game-intensive Christmas.
All right, nice.
That's about it.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to community feedback.
Let's do, because I'm eager to talk about especially the Wells Technology Tools for Wells teachers, I should say, on Facebook. It's a new Facebook group. There's been a lot of great stuff shared there. And most recently, someone asked about 3D printer recommendations. Let's see if I can find it. It was Joe Fichinko, and he said he just received $800 to put toward the purchase of a 3D printer. Can anyone recommend a model they really like for that price? Or can anyone make a really good argument to try and push for other funding to go to a higher price point? And it just so happened, my husband and I were recently talking, and I threw out the name of something called the Prusa. It's a Prusa i3. That's their current model. It's named for the designer guy, and he happens to be over in the Czech Republic. And he actually took the RepRap printer, which is a printer that my husband had built one. So we were familiar with RepRap, and he's improved upon it over time and, you know, customized it and made it something that he sells. And you can order it from him as a kit and build it yourself for $749, or you can order an assembled one for $999. So I just shared shared that. And then the discussion got a little more interesting. Kurt Shallon chimed in and said he actually has the Prusa. And he said they built it themselves. This is a teacher, a Wells teacher. He said it forces you to learn how it all works for troubleshooting purposes down the road. We also installed a Raspberry Pi Zero on it, and it gives it wireless capabilities to print from a web browser as well. He's been very pleased with it so far. The reviews for it rank it near the best, if not the best, of 3D printers. So he said he highly recommended it. So that was like the icing on the cake, and it pushed Kevin to push the buy button, and we actually ordered one, and it's actually in process of being shipped from Czech Republic. It's supposed to be here next week, so stay tuned for more details about our new 3D printer. We're very excited about that. I will say that Jason Schmidt chimed in on the conversation. He said that the website NWA3D.com is a company by educators for educators, and they give you live free video tech support as long as you have one of their printers. So he recommended them very highly as well. So there are options out there, and the price point is coming down, and you can get something that'll do some good 3D printing for you. So
you have a first project in mind already?
Actually, my daughter-in-law shared something that I think we have to print. It was a bust of Julius Caesar, but it was a pencil holder. And in the back, where you put your pencils, there at an angle that looks as if he's being stabbed, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And so, I have a son who's a serious Caesar fan.
Etu Brute.
We'll be doing the Etu Brute thing, yes. Fun stuff.
All right, neat.
A little more from the Tech Tools for Teachers site. Mike Plucker chimed in and shared a link to a blog post called Modernizing Math Manipulatives. And he said it lists some more virtual math manipulatives. I think we talked about some a few weeks ago on Wells Tech that people had shared. One mentioned is a free iPad app that says it does no tracking or gathering of your data. So that would be a good option to explore. The article not only lists the various manipulatives, but it also gives great accounts of how the author blends and flips math using these manipulatives to gather important data and adjust her in-class small group math lessons accordingly. So it's not a real long read, but I think it might be great for math teachers to check that out. And then one more mention from that group, Jason Schmidt shared a link to something called StorytimeFromSpace.com. And it literally is astronauts on the space station reading children's stories and doing some little science experiments to go along with them. So looks like a really cool site if you want to check that out. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Finally, in community feedback, I wanted to make mention of a conversation over in Wells Google Schools on Google+. Ryan Rosenthal threw out a question about digital signage. He says he is thinking of going with a Chrome bit or running HDMI over Cat 6 to something else like a Chrome box. And he has a pretty good amount of space, so he was thinking about a 75-inch television and asked whether commercial versus residential made a difference and what brand, if anyone had recommendations on television brand. And one responder in particular, Joshua Shanick from Kettle Moraine Lutheran High School, says it sounds like a good plan to me. Regardless of the size you get, you'll want to test some font sizes, make sure what you're using is readable from an appropriate distance, and train the content creators to use the fonts of at least that size. He went on to say that residential displays often don't have a warranty that covers commercial use, but typically, price-wise, it's just worth it to go that direction. If you need features like being able to control the TV through an app or web page or turn it on and off on a schedule, you need to make sure that it has those kind of functionalities built in. And then he just recommended not going real low-end as far as a brand, looking for something like Samsung or LG or whatever. So interesting conversation. Maybe that will influence some Black Friday buying for churches and schools. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Yeah, if it's worth anything, we use Chrome bits here in the Senate office. So we have four monitors that we use, and three of them are displaying the same thing. One is in the CEF area, displaying interest rates for them, and we've been really happy with the Chrome bits. We did both actually. Some of the Some of the monitors we bought were just at Best Buy, residential, kind of commercial, you know, good sale price things. And of all the ones we put up 5 years ago, only one has failed, and it was cheap enough that we just replaced it. I think we replaced it with a Vizio, and that was fine. So we've had good luck with Chrome Bits and kind of off-the-rack displays.
Great feedback. Thank you.
All right.
That's it for community feedback.
And if somebody would like to contribute to the show, how might they do that?
Well, how could they avoid doing it? There's so many options, I guess. Over at wellstech.wells.net, you'll find links to all different social media outlets where we have our ear to the channel and are eager to hear what you're doing in your ministry settings. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram. We're still on Google Plus, even though it may be going away fairly soon. So give us a shout out through social media or send us an email at wellstech@wells.net. Or you can even leave us a voicemail right there on the website. There's a little tab in blue on the right-hand side. So we'd love to hear from you.
Great. Let's move on to our video of the week. And because we are in Thanksgiving week, we thought we'd pick something that would be Thanksgiving-like, something that would give thanks, and turn to our friends at Koine. They are publishing, seems like, new music all the time now. We talked to them on the show a number of weeks back, and they're starting a new ministry where they're doing a little bit more of that worship music that is in video form. And they're doing something called songs with lyrics/music notation, so that as you see the imagery of the song and hear their voices singing it, you can follow along. And kind of a neat technology that they use. So on their in the YouTube video, they say, guess what? We've started giving away free Christian music, worship media, worship videos with lyrics, sheet music, motion graphics, and sing-along videos with musical notation. And one of those sing-along videos with music notation is Now Thank We All Our God. 3 minutes and 36 seconds worth. So go ahead and tune into that. We'll have a link in the show notes.
Awesome. And we're going to come back again next week, Martin, and do show 577, God willing. And we are looking forward to having Rachel Feld join us. It's EdTech Week, and frequent listeners will remember that we're looking at a book this season called Faithfully Connected. We are up to Chapter 3. The title of the chapter is Digital Communication, and wow, that's a biggie. Mm-hmm. So those of you that are listening to our digital communication right now, you want to tune in next week and learn about digital communication and teaching young minds about using it properly.
Very good. Thank you, Sally. And thanks to all of you who tune in and listen to our little show. We're happy that you do that. And hope you'll come back next week, and we'll do it all over again. Blessings on your Thanksgiving preparations and your giving thanks. We have so much to be thankful for. Bye-bye, everybody.